Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. We are a couple days away from April, which is designated as the National Prevention of Child Abuse Month. And joining me this morning is Wendell Telto, the Executive Director of Prevent Child Abuse Texas. Wendell and I will be having a candid discussion about prevention of child abuse and bringing more awareness to this issue. Good morning, Wendell. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Johnny. Thank you for having me today. It's a pleasure
fantastic.
To be with you.
Fantastic. I'm happy to have you on. I think this is a fantastic issue for us to talk about. I've got some stats that I want to share with everyone, and when I got the stats, it was just fascinating to me. It's just overwhelming to me. It's just amazing. Anyway, here are some of the stats that I want to share with everyone before we get into this discussion. According to Child Help USA, which is a foundation established about 50 years ago to address this issue, over 3 million reports of child abuse are made every year in the United States. However, these reports also include multiple children. And in 2007, according to them, approximately 5.8 million children were involved in an estimated 3.2 million child abuse reports and allegations. Another statistics compiled by the Pediatrics Association showed out of their 125 million reported cases, which is one in every 58 children in the United States in 2006, more than half, which is 61% of children, were victims of neglect, meaning a parent or a guardian failed to provide the child's basic needs. Forms of neglect include educational neglect, physical neglect, emotional neglect, and then the other 44% were victims of abuse, including physical, sexual, as well as emotional abuse. And according to their study in 2007 alone, an average of nearly 4 children die every day as a result of child abuse or neglect. Numbers-wise, it's phenomenal, 1,760 children. And then the CDC also did a study, which I didn't even realize the CDC kept records of this kind of stuff, which is great to me, knowing that they do, showed 1 in 50 infants in the U.S. have been either neglected or abused. Regardless of which statistics that we go by, all of them have a common denominator, that is about 5 children die every day as a result of child abuse. And then finally, for those of you who wants to put the dollar amount to this issue, one study shows the estimated annual cost resulting from child abuse and neglect in the United States for 2007 is $1.4 billion. Wendell, I mean, you're in the field. These numbers may not be shocking to you. I could tell you this much: for someone like me who's single and have no children, I'm blown away. I mean, it's just amazing. I got to admit that I'm somewhat ignorant about the severity of this issue, and I'm so glad that I have you on my show this morning to talk about this. What are your thoughts about the various statistics?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct, and I think part of the problem is the public isn't aware of what all it entails. When we look at the number of kids involved, you know, the numbers you just throw out and the mm-hmm. number of kids who die every year, and yet Texas, over 250 children die every year by abuse and neglect in Texas alone.
Wow.
You know, there was a recent study that came out that over the last 7 years, more children died in Texas from abuse than any other state.
And yet, that's amazing.
We're still seeing some children being left in harmful situations, and I don't know what the answer is sometimes.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, I just could not believe when I pulled those numbers up, and when I look at it, I say, oh my gosh! I mean, this is something that I guess it's weaved into our society. We're kind of taking it for granted. You know, it's off a majority of our radars, and certainly it's off my radar because I don't have a family per se right now. So it's not something that I'm looking forward to getting, I guess, every day or conscious about that, you know.
When you also look at the numbers that 1 out of 3 girls will be sexually abused and molested by the time they reach 18,
Wow.
And it's estimated 1 out of 5 boys will be sexually abused or molested by the time they reach 18. I mean, even sexual abuse alone,
mm-hmm.
the numbers are just astounding sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is phenomenal. Well, let's get started. Tell us a little bit about what child abuse entails. What's that all about? I mean, give us some information about that.
Well, I think the public normally thinks of child abuse in the terms of physical abuse. You know,
mm-hmm.
the biting, the hitting, the slapping, whatever, the burning, or sexual abuse, having sex with a child. But
mm-hmm.
there's also the emotional abuse. There's also neglect. 50% of the confirmed cases in Texas alone are neglect, and oftentimes we leave that out there somewhere. But it's primarily, you know, the harm, either physical or emotional harm to the child, providing services or care for the child where there's omission of services, like improper care, improper supervision,
mm-hmm.
medical needs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Fail to provide food or cover. So, you know, the abuse and neglect, maltreatment of a child, covers a whole gamut of different subjects.
That's amazing. I mean, for something like that to, you know, to I guess we really don't know the different shapes, forms of abuse. Do you find that that's a common ignorance, I guess, from everyone, from the John Q. public in a way?
Well, when we look at, we do a lot of work with teachers and child care providers, and
mm-hmm.
we talk to these people who are the largest reporting group of child abuse because they're the first one to see the child outside of the home on a regular basis.
Yeah.
When we talk to them, we say, you know, one of the first questions we ask them is, what is abuse to you?
Right.
And you'll get the 100 people in the room, you get 100 different answers of what abuse is. And, you know, there's a great misconception about what abuse really is.
What are the signs?
Most of them think that, like in sex abuse, they think you have to have sex with a child. No, you don't. It just,
right.
So many areas.
That covers, you know, it goes in that category of sex abuse. But how can say someone even like me? I mean, of course, now we kind of know some of, you know, what abuse may be. But what are the signs of an abused child?
Well, we look at the child. First off, like take physical abuse. You look at the different bruises that are uncommon. I mean, most kids are going to get bruises on knees, elbows, chin, even their noses. But if they start having bruises on inside of their thighs or underneath their arm,
mm-hmm.
uncommon areas where they normally would not bruise.
Mm-hmm.
When you start looking at their behavior, have their behavior changed? Have they become more aggressive or have they become more passive?
Mm-hmm.
Are there certain people they don't want to be with? We know that like 93% of all child abuse is at the hand of a caregiver, either the mother, father, stepfather, or someone within the family.
Mm-hmm.
So is there someone within the family they don't want to be associated with, they don't want to be close to, they try to avoid? And I think oftentimes kids will tell us
mm-hmm.
what's going on, but we as parents and we as adults sometimes don't always listen to them carefully enough.
Right.
So we need to start listening to our kids and what are they saying? Johnny, and that's just a side
yeah.
thought, one of the things, we know from recent studies that the average parent spends about 7 minutes a day with their child. Those
wow.
numbers to me are staggering. I think one of the first things we need to start doing is listening to our children, spending time and hearing what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just because you're in the same room, that does not mean that you have bonding.
That's right.
I think people forget that. Well, there are times that you want to do that. That's the quantity of time. But then there's quality of time, too. And quality of time comes from having that conversation, having
right.
the opportunity to be able to connect verbally and talking and, of course, asking the right questions and listening.
And
I
listening,
think
exactly.
be the most important thing. Yeah. Well, what does Prevent Child Abuse Texas do, and what are your services, and what do you offer?
We work primarily in three different areas. One is training. We try to train professionals, teachers, child care workers, child protective services workers, counselors, therapists, to recognize, two, to report, and three, more importantly, to prevent child abuse in all its forms.
Mm-hmm.
Then we try to get to the public in different public awareness campaigns, parent education, material out to the public about what is child abuse. But more importantly, again, back to how can we prevent it? What can you do to make your child safe? Mm-hmm. And thirdly is advocacy. We work with the state legislature and state agencies to try to be a voice for the child in these agencies and government entities.
Now, that is very interesting also, because when you talk about legislations and everything else, it wasn't until maybe within the last, 10, 15 years or so that April was designated as, well, it may be longer than that. I apologize for missing the date. Perhaps you can tell us about that. But April has been declared as the National Month of Prevention of Child Abuse. So how did that go about?
Well, it actually came about because we were finding that the public was unaware of the problem of child abuse, and mm-hmm. so we wanted to bring more awareness to the problem of child abuse and what we can do to prevent children from ever after suffering the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so we came up with April's Child Abuse Prevention Month simply for public awareness, to get the public aware.
And apparently, you know, they did an excellent job on this, because having something like this being put forth to everyone, I think it helps everyone understand that, you know, sometimes we have to be mindful. We tend to sometimes get in the grinder and not thinking about, you know, not looking ahead of time, you know, or being aware of what's happening and so forth. How can someone prevent child abuse?
You know, and that's, Johnny, that's a really a tricky subject, because when we start talking to public about preventing child abuse, oftentimes they don't know what to do. But so
mm-hmm.
they have the perception, I don't abuse my child, so there's nothing
right.
I can do. But I think one of the first things we need to start doing is being ears and eyes for our children.
Yeah.
You can look at your neighbors. Look in the neighborhood. Most people don't even know their next door neighbors. Offer supports for them, particularly
right.
for birth to the child. We can start listening to the child. When we see a child that may be physically being abused at a store,
mm-hmm.
don't approach the person doing the abusing necessarily, but talk to the person. You know, maybe comment something like, oh, I can remember my child was like that. They can be a handful. To try to diffuse the situation slightly for a while. But, I think the main thing is just be eyes and ears. We did a campaign a number of years ago called Don't Walk Away, because
mm-hmm.
what we were finding was too many people would see a child that they thought were being abused, but rather than get involved, they would walk away.
People have a tendency of not wanting to get involved, though. I mean, for two reasons. Maybe one is security. The other one is, like, it's none of my business, and maybe it is not child abuse.
Right.
What I may think, it comes back to the adage, you know, what I say, you know, I say potatoes, you say potatoes. How do we distinguish that?
And that's part of the problem we run into all the time, and I just tell the public, if I want to make a mistake, I'd rather make a mistake and err on the child, protecting the child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think we also need to start supporting programs for parents, particularly new parents, be it better parent education programs, preparing our children in school before they had the birth of a child. I mean, when we talk about 1/10 of all births in Texas are to teen parents,
right?
We can't wait until they're in their 20s or whatever. We got to start educating these kids earlier about
mm-hmm.
what it means to be a parent, how to be a good parent. Because we know kids who were abused, when they become parents, are 6 times as likely to abuse their own kids.
Because they don't know any better?
They don't
because,
know any better.
You know, because I know this much, even in what I do, we mirror, you know, we live ourselves with experience. I mean, you know, we use experience as a guide, I guess. For like
tend to parent as we were parented.
Right. Right. And
well,
so.
I can tell you example after example of kids, once they become parents, will take their abuse at what happened to them
mm-hmm.
and reuse it on their own kids.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have people, there was a case recently where a great-grandfather was convicted of child sex abuse. He'd sexually abused his daughters. He'd sexually
mm-hmm.
abused his granddaughters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think was working on his great-granddaughters.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody thought that was wrong.
Right.
His explanation was, I was preparing him for marriage. So we had 3 generations that didn't know having sex with your granddaughter or your grandfather
right.
was wrong.
Right. That's phenomenal. That's amazing. How can someone report an incident?
Actually, three different ways. You can report it, call the 800 number, which is 1-800-254-254-252-5400. 252-5400.
Okay.
Or call 911 if you think it's an emergency situation.
Right.
Or you can actually report it online now, textabusehotline.org.
That's fantastic. That's good. And this is, I presume, this is the national hotline?
No, it's Texas.
It's Texas? This is Texas? Okay. That's amazing. I mean, do you guys, can you tell us, you know, roughly what kind of statistics you all have on an average on a daily basis?
Well,
like
in 2009, there were like over 252,000 intake calls reporting child abuse to CPS intake.
Okay. That can be overwhelming for the staff, social workers to be out there too, isn't it?
Yes. And that's part of the problem is, you know, we know during certain periods of days people are on hold, far too long. But think about the numbers, over 252,000 reports a year. That's a lot of calls.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When I went through the numbers, and this is just, again, coming back to some of the statistics, I mean, I talk about 61% of children were victims of neglect, and this is back in 2006, and 61% sounds very small, but when you put a number of 771,700 children, that changes the dynamics.
Yep.
I think, you know, that's amazing. And then coming back with the fact that you're looking at that's neglect, and then the flip side is the abuse side of the equation. You have another, it is 44%. Well, 44% is no big deal. The president's rating is 48, so that's pretty, you know, you're looking at percentage, which is nothing. But when you put the numbers on it, 553,300 children that were abused, and of course they have, you know, broken down to physical, sexual, and emotional abuse. That's a big number. That's staggering, and that's alone in. And I know we talk about Texas, we're talking about United States, but God forbid, you know, the world. I mean, this is just, I'm like overwhelmed, to be honest, when I went through the numbers. How often does cases, you know, reported in the sense that, and how it's handled? I mean, you talk about over 200,000 a year in 2009. How are these handled? I mean, once they come in, the calls come in, what happened next?
Well, if in the evaluation of the intake of the Child Protective Services intake worker, if the evaluation is that they need an investigation, which about a third of the calls will actually be confirmed as abuse.
Mm-hmm.
The other two-thirds don't meet the criteria to be confirmed as abuse.
But you rather get the call rather than not get the call, though.
Right. Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And that's, you know, even Child Protective Services says, we want to get the calls.
Right.
Let us make the determination if it's abuse. If you suspect abuse, you're legally obligated to report it.
And I didn't realize that. That's interesting. I mean, can that person be liable for, I mean, you know,
no.
Somehow be held responsible?
No, if you make the report in good faith, you cannot be held legally liable, either civilly or criminally liable for making the report if you do it in good faith. And I don't know of any, you know.
But what if you know of something's happening and you don't report it?
I have heard of people who did not report who have gotten in trouble for not making a report, for not protecting the child.
Because you're basically an accessory to the abuse in some ways, I guess. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
You're legally liable.
That's interesting. I mean, that brings us to, you know, the certain laws here. What are the laws governing child abuse?
Well, most of the laws are found in the Family Code, and the main law I want to talk about was that you're legally responsible for making a report. If you suspect it, you have to make the report. And oftentimes I'll hear from school teachers say, well, only the principal can make it, or in a child care facility, only the director can make the report. No, if you suspect it, you're the one that has to make the report.
Mm-hmm.
If I as a neighbor saw the report, I couldn't talk to somebody else and still have somebody else make the report. I have to do it. One of the other laws, John, I want to talk about is if a child comes to you and tells you that something is happening that is abuse,
right,
and you're the first person that child told,
mm-hmm,
that is just like you actually saw the abuse going on. It's called outcry. So that when a child comes to you, makes an outcry about the abuse,
right,
that has just as much credibility with Child Protective Services as if you were in the room, saw the abuse going on. And that's why we've got to start believing our kids what they're saying so that we can take the necessary legal action to get the process started.
I see. But what I like about it is that it does put a certain amount of responsibility now to the adults, because once you hear about it, you can't ignore it.
Right.
You have to go to the next level, if nothing else, validate what the child is saying. And,
that's right.
And that's what's good about it, because obviously, you know, in all the statistics that you have, most of these reports are brushed off by the adults simply because, oh, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, or this, they're just ignoring the kids or not hearing the kids. So now,
well, when we start talking about child abuse, when we start talking about child abuse prevention,
mm-hmm,
even though it's been around for hundreds of years,
right,
it's only been in the last 30 or 40 years that we've really started recognizing child abuse and doing something about it. You mentioned CDC, Center for,
right,
Disease Control. They actually now are CDC and prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Child abuse prevention falls underneath their purview. And what they say is child abuse is the number one preventable childhood disease.
Oh, yeah, I would think so. I think it's it definitely can be prevented. You know, the adults have all the control.
That's right.
And education, or whichever way you want to take a look at it, which I'm sure we're going to discuss down, you know, as we go along here. But I honestly believe this is not something that, well, we have no control of. I mean, we do and we don't, you know. But technically, I think we have more than less, with the way I look at it, you know. And of course, number one is increasing the awareness of it. What are some of the short and long term effects on a child's life?
Well, the short-term effects can be devastating, but even even more importantly, the long-term effects, when we look at the productivity. And, Johnny, when we go back to the types of abuse, this sounds kind of bad, but physical abuse, kids who are physically abused, their bruises and will heal.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're finding is kids who have been emotionally abused,
mm-hmm,
their effect is longer-lasting. And, matter of fact, they never really grow out of it. It takes a lot more work to heal the emotional abuse.
Yeah.
But we look at what happens in sexual abuse, it's not only the sex abuse that goes on, but it's the emotional abuse that goes along with it, and
mm-hmm,
they're closely tied together. So short term, we see kids reacting very differently. Most kids will either become very passive or very aggressive. We know kids who have been sexually abused, usually about 60 to 70% of the times, will be sexually abused again before they turn 18, because it's almost like they've given up.
I see.
And so these kids need a lot of help very soon, short term. But we also can't just say they need 6 months or 6 weeks of treatment therapy. We've got to look at the long-term effects. Well, how can we help them become productive citizens?
Right.
Because oftentimes, and I think you and I talked about this before, bonding sometimes just doesn't come about.
Right.
They don't know how to bond sometimes.
You know, what's amazing about it, I'm looking at another situation, another stats in terms of consequences of child abuse and neglect. About 25% of children experience child abuse end up becoming teenage parents. Have you have any thoughts about that?
Well, we also know teen parents are at a high risk of being abusive because, again, they haven't had their own emotional, physical needs met. And all
right.
of a sudden, they have to start meeting the emotional, physical needs of another person in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know, and the parenting training is not there. They don't know always what to expect from the child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I also, you know, I also look at it that we sometimes do more to protect our animals than we do to protect our kids.
Right. Right.
I mean, when we look at the first case of child abuse in the United States, there were no laws against abusing children. There were laws against abusing
animals.
And so a little girl who was being physically abused, Mary Ellen, who was being physically, emotionally neglected,
mm-hmm,
abused, there were no laws. Everybody knew about it, but there were no laws to protect her. So a social worker went to a judge, actually went to the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, and said, Mary Ellen's an animal. Had the judge declare Mary Ellen an animal, and the parents were prosecuted for abuse of an animal, not of a child.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, it's. I guess we've moved. We've come a long way since then.
Yes.
With regards to that, and but you know, it's just. I guess again, it comes back to the awareness level. Another consequence, I think, when you look at child abuse, I'm looking at some stats where that shows that they are most likely to at greater risk of you know, of getting STDs, those kind of things, links to. Criminal behavior and stuff like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, and we're also finding as technology moves along, the types of abuse are changing also. When we look at, I think it's been estimated now 60% of teenage girls have taken a picture of themselves nude or partially nude on their cell phone and sent it to somebody.
Right.
And then when that picture is then sent to who knows however many people.
Right.
There was a recent study that came out that social networking sites are going to be a bigger problem or bigger threat to children than pedophiles surfing the internet.
And you're talking about sexting here.
Sexting, texting, even such things as Facebook and some of those other social networking where kids will post things about other kids and there's been a lot of suicides. There's been a lot of physical and emotional abuse going on from these things. It's all changing.
It's very difficult to govern that because once it's innocent from their perspective, I mean, the originator, for example, if I were to take a picture of myself and, well, heck, I mean, you're a friend of mine. I'm texting it to you. That's quite innocent, I guess, in some ways. Or you know, or a boyfriend doing it for a girlfriend, or a girlfriend doing it to a boyfriend, and then once it goes beyond that, I mean, would that be considered as, you know, some sort of abuse? That, well, let me put it this way. Let's back up here a little bit. If I've been you know, coerced into doing that, then I would think that would be abuse, wouldn't it? And
yes.
Then versus, like, if I free willy, you know, wanting to do that, then it would be different.
Yes. But it's also what we're also finding is that when we have underage kids' pictures being sent around, it's promoting child pornography, and it really typically is.
Right.
And there's been some boys who have received these pictures on their cell phones who have been held legally liable because even though they didn't ask for the pictures, they've got them, and it's considered child pornography.
Interesting.
It's just a whole new...
New area to address the issue. Well, because it's exploitation. What started out perhaps may be something innocent, and then it got off in the wrong direction, so to speak.
Yep.
And it's interesting. How about the parents then? After finding out, you know, the child's abuse and what kind of effects, you know, they go through.
Well, I think, it's, you know, what we're seeing is some parents suffer just as much as the child does because, you know, as a parent who has two great kids, if something happened to them, I suffer too. I also need help on how to deal with it and how to deal with the situation because all of a sudden your relationship with your child may change because the child has changed. An event's happened in that child's life who you may not know how to deal with. So I think the parents also need to be aware and handle it. But you also need to be aware of what's going on. You know, when we look at a recent study that came out by the national government, actually we've made progress in the last few years on preventing child abuse, particularly child sex abuse. We've, as parents, we've learned not to put our kids in situations that something may happen. And we're being better about screening out some volunteer coaches who may be pedophiles that look into your close to kids. So we've done some good work in certain areas, but there's so much more. As parents, we need to do. We always need to be vigilant about what kind of situation their kids are going to be put into. Who are they going to be with? What are the situation? Who are their friends? You know, who are their neighbors?
You guys provide support groups for parents?
I would support it. I don't know that there's that many out there, to be honest with you. I'm not aware of any of them.
That's interesting, because that would be something that that would be very helpful, don't you think?
Yes, because sometimes the parents need to have other people they can talk to figure out how they did it. But I always recommend the parent gets help just like the child does, because they've got to know how to deal with that child. Because I'll guarantee you that child's life has changed drastically. But we also know, Johnny, part of the problem is we also know 93% of all child abuse is at the hand of the caregiver. So frequently it may be one of the parents who is the abuser. So how does the other parent deal with it?
This is something very interesting, because, I mean, just imagine now we have technology where parents can put cameras in the house or wherever. I mean, we monitor things all the time, so to speak. But just imagine years back when those things are not available. You just can't even imagine what may have happened or not happened and so forth. So there are things that I guess, you know, we can do now that helps that. And you're talking about the caregiver themselves being involved with something like this. Well, let's talk about the children staying from situations, you know, once they abuse, and walking them through and what you guys are helping them out with. What sort of success rate in terms of coping up, and what are the things, you know, when we talk about long-term and short-term, which you have mentioned just now, what are the success stories, so to speak?
I think the success stories are when we start getting to kids. You know, it used to be, and one of the problems we had was stranger danger,
mm-hmm.
when most of the child abuse happens at the hands of a parent. You can't talk to the child, well, did your mom or dad do this?
Mm-hmm.
But children are a lot smarter than we think they are, and one of the things we try to get to, particularly child care providers and early elementary age teachers, mm-hmm. is help your child understand what's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to necessarily change their home life drastically, what's appropriate? How can you make that child feel better about themselves? And I think there's two things that all parents and all teachers need to do with kids. Give that kid self-esteem and prepare him for life.
Mm-hmm.
And so my recommendation has always been help build that child's self-esteem up. Give him something to feel good about.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we talk about kids who abuse kids, bullying or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
We often think the bully has a lot of self-confidence. Normally it's just the opposite. They have very low self-esteem, self-confidence. So we need to find things to give these kids self-esteem, self-confidence, so they can be productive.
What are the most common type of child abuse that you have encountered in terms of, I guess, age-wise, you know, when you break it down to different age categories?
Neglect is 50% of all cases in Texas. But we also know most abuse, physical abuse, happens to a child around the age of 2.
At 2 years old?
Yeah.
Well,
because think about what happened. They don't call them the terrible twos for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
What happens at 2 is kids start learning after mom and dad are no. They
mm-hmm.
start becoming more mobile. They
mm-hmm.
start becoming more exploring in their lives, reaching and touching things and grabbing things. And parents also sometimes think all children should be completely potty trained by 2.
Mm-hmm.
When you put all those factors together, it sets off the parent some way. Either
mm-hmm.
wet the diaper, soil the diaper, say no to them once too often, or get into something in the home.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of physical abuse
mm-hmm.
happens at the age of around 2. The most common.
And
that's also where the most common age for death, child deaths from abuse is around 2.
Because when I look at that, is basically, to me, the parents are the one that needed to be educated more about how to be a parent.
Yeah, because oftentimes what we find is they don't understand the developmental stages of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And 2, they've not been taught the coping mechanisms of But let's be honest, being a parent's hard. It's very, very difficult. And oftentimes, child abuse is a result of other problems. When we talk about parents who have overworked, they've been fired, maybe their car broke down, rent's due, whatever. We hear about these things, the stressors in their lives. Oftentimes, it's the parent, the child who catches the result of it. When they get into something they shouldn't get into, when they inconvenience the parent by wetting the diaper,
right,
or when they say no one too often.
Do you find the report shows that there are more, say, abuse or neglect coming from a single-family home?
That is one of the risk factors, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a high risk factor. It's not necessarily related to any socioeconomic, race, or anything, but there are certain risk factors. Single parent is one. Teen parents is another.
Mm-hmm.
Having other stressors in their life, like low educational level because they're usually related to the type of job they have. There may be more stress in their job.
Mm-hmm.
Or their car is broken. You know, they don't have adequate transportation. So
right.
There's all these little risk factors. But you also have to go back to what are the supports do they have around them.
Right.
When I was growing up, all of my relatives lived within 5 miles of me.
Right.
Now most people don't even know their next-door neighbors.
Well, your neighbor could be your enemy,
exactly,
for lack of a better term here. So it's
and that's another thing I'd like to point out. I think all parents should go on the website and find the registered child sex abusers in their area.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be surprised at the number.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, I grew up in Malaysia, and what's interesting about it, I remember when I was 5, 6 years old, and a group of us friends, my gosh, we were about 1 to 2 miles away from home playing soccer, you name it, you know, as a group. And when I was a teenager, I remembered a neighbor, a boy 2 houses down from us, really doesn't go out after school, just stayed home. And I couldn't relate to it at that time. Of course, shortly afterwards, I came to the United States. But the point is the dynamics have changed.
The whole family makeup has changed.
Yeah. And so I guess, you know, we have to somehow create situations here to bring everyone together in terms of talking within the family, obviously, and of course with the neighbors in some ways. You know, you got to be able to rely on one another, so to speak, somehow. Helping one another out. But coming back to the social economic situation, the situation right now within the last several years here with the economy the way it is, obviously that's it contributes to a lot of stress to anyone. And I know you mentioned that there's no basically distinct breakdown with among the social economic groups. Has that changed? And I think abuse happens universally. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're rich, poor, or middle class. What are some of the things that you see at the higher level versus the middle and the lower level? What are the things that you can share with us on that?
Well, I think you nailed a lot of them when we start looking at the factors. You know, what triggers the factors? And socioeconomically, we know the economy is going to have an effect on children. We also know, to give another example, the first week of Christmas vacation, the first week of summer vacation, spring break, child abuse rates go up because the kids are at home and putting more pressure and stress on the family that not used to having that child 24 hours, but used to having that child for just a few hours in the evening, now has that child all day. And so we're seeing factors. But, you know, going back just a second, also, we're also seeing other factors in a child's life that have changed. We talked about the technology, but we're also looking at what are the child seeing on TV?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of video games is the child playing? These things are all having an effect on how the child views abuse in society, but how the parents view it. I mean, when we talk about one of the most popular TV programs on right now is Two and a Half Men. But and they've got a young child in the home.
Right.
Look how those two guys treat women if you will.
Right, right.
So
it's presented as a comedy, though.
Yes, but these children don't see it that way.
That's right.
They see it as, okay, everybody can have sex with everybody else.
Right.
We also know when Bill Clinton had his little escapades in the White House.
Right.
View of oral sex among teenagers changed drastically.
That's right.
Most teenagers then consider oral sex as part of dating. That was not
right. As a non-sex. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So even one event sometimes changes the whole dynamics of how we as a society deal with some of the abuse.
Well, how can children stay away from this situation? I mean, we're talking a little bit more about, you know, where they are in, I guess, once they reach puberty in some ways, because they're coherent enough to rationalize things. How can they stay away from these kind of situations?
I think we've just got to be, we as adults have to be more aware and pass this down to our kids. I just heard a great presentation about preventing child abuse in the next over the next 120 years, and in his presentation, it's going to take four generations to change society enough to completely eliminate child abuse. And I think that he's probably pretty well correct. We're just going to have to take one step at a time and then keep moving that down. But I think the awareness factor, and you know, and Johnny, I applaud you again for bringing this subject up, because it's not always popular. But the more we make the public aware of the whole situation, I think the greater effect we're going to have over our children and the next generation of children.
Well, we program, Wendell, we program as human beings now, especially this generation or this time within this generation, certainly within the last, and it's a gradual process you talk about. We talk about generations here. It does take about three generations to completely go through the cycle, so to speak. But coming back to what we were talking about in terms of programming, this is a gradual process. We are in at a state in time right now where you have the glamorous life. That's real life, real situation where, you know, oh, yeah, I mean, that's all we're interested in. We're not interested in the core issue. And I'm fortunate enough, having the opportunity to be at your 24th annual conference here in Dallas last month, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to the counselors and the social workers. I'm so glad I had a full house. That was very, very exciting. And it brought someone like me into a situation where, wow, I'm totally ignorant here, being single and having no kids, like I say again, and so not yet anyway. So what happens is that, you know, like, that's not on my radar. And I grew up in a lot of people say, oh, nobody's family is perfect. You're right. But technically speaking, as far as from abuse standpoint of view, no. I mean, so it's not on my radar at all. And having this opportunity to bring this up and telling people about it, and it ties back again to the idea of, you know, are we willing to change our behavior tendencies? Because what you talk about generations here, about the presentation you heard about the 3 to 4 generations of changing oneself, that's changing one's behavior tendency. And if we approach it from a standpoint of unconditional love, which is God's love, then the same old saying, do unto others as others do unto you, it changes the dynamics a little bit.
Totally. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And, you know, unfortunately, I keep hearing, you know, I keep getting asked this question.
Yeah.
Are the kids better off now than they were 20 years ago, 30 years ago? And I'm, you know, I think they are in so many ways, but in so many ways they're not.
Right.
But I also think, unfortunately, I have to keep step back and say, do we really care if they're better off?
Right.
Because look at the last presidential election.
Right.
All the monumental things that happened in that election.
Mm-hmm.
How often were kids mentioned in the rhetoric?
Right.
The only time I heard kids mentioned was what kind of dog are the Obamas going to get in the White House?
Right.
And how can a vice president have a special needs child and take care of that child?
Right.
Kids just weren't even mentioned in the radar screen.
Right. Right.
So I think we've got to go back and look at how much do we as a society value our kids.
And it comes back to education, though, Wendell. I mean, I know you mentioned that, you know, and it's true. I mean, I'm not singling any particular ethnic groups or anything like that. But in general, it comes back this is a core issue. So it starts one family at a time, one ethnic group at a time, one social economic group at a time. And it goes forward. It has to be bottom-driven as well as it may be top-governed, but it has to be bottom-driven. And the process is, and we're not talking about you need to have a PhD in child prevention, abuse prevention. It's basic common sense. You mentioned something which was very interesting earlier in the show about, okay, no problem. You got kids that are teenage parents now. Fine. After the fact. So what can we do about it? Do we have educational systems in place that we can to roll out there, so to speak? If these kids are in school or in some ways they're connected with, and you mentioned about now the CDC has gotten a little bit more aggressive in terms of tracking, child neglect, obviously, in their situation. As an infant, so to speak. So there are systems that can be created. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think we've got to help prepare our parents to be better parents. That's
right.
The bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you said is so true, but it always goes back to how are we preparing our parents to be better parents? That may even involve looking at the workforce. How can our employers be more parent friendly?
Right.
I know you talked about the economy, the change of the economy.
Right.
We know parents now are working under more pressure.
Right.
We know they're working more hours than before.
Right.
So that always seems to come back, though, on what kind of life the kids are having at home when the parents get home.
And the uniqueness about this, Wendell, is that prevent child abuse is everybody's concern. Child abuse is everyone has to take ownership of it. Even like someone like me, even though I don't have any kids right now or whatever, I have to take ownership because if I do, then my thought process, things that I do, and you see, if I run a business, I'm running it differently. Just overall, I think, you know, it's not something that you can say, well, it's not in my backyard, it's not in my house, so I don't have to worry about it. Because on the long term, it's like a disease, because eventually, you may not catch up with my family in this generation, but guess what? It might catch up with my family in the next generation or the generation after that. If we look at it from that perspective, eventually, you know, we have to prevent it right now, I guess. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you know, if nothing else, you started off with a program with this. Look at how much child abuse and neglect cost the United States in 2007. I think you said $103 billion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about our deficit and our budget.
Yeah.
We can make a big difference right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, when you look at – and people – maybe that's what will – raise the awareness of people when you look at it's when you spend in 200 in 2007 that was 3 years ago $104 billion was associated with that, and I'm sure the figures are much higher now. And I do want to touch this though. I mean, I met with a lot of the counselors and the social workers at the conference. I had the opportunity to talk with them, and you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about is how do you guys deal with this day in, day out? I mean, it's got to be stressful. It's got to be draining. How do you guys handle that?
It is very draining. It's very depressing sometimes when we see that the situation our kids are left in, and we see kids who have been abused sexually, physically, neglectful, emotionally. And that's one reason we have such a high turnover in our rate, in our field. I think one of the last studies I saw is roughly 30% of all Child Protective Services caseworkers turn over every year. I mean, 30%.
That's very, very high.
And, you know, but the stress, because these people truly care about kids.
Right.
And to see what's happening to the kids and not being able to help all the kids, it just wears them out. It just saps them out. And that's why, again, I want to thank you for being part of our conference, because when I read the evaluations of your presentation,
mm-hmm.
they were so enlightened to hear there was hope, that
yeah.
people care, that there's
yeah.
something, you know, there was such a positive atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing they've got to go back to the depressing atmosphere on Monday morning.
Right, right. And that's what I wanted to bring in terms of telling them, hey, you know, you can make a positive difference. And the theme actually I did was strictly in every one of us there's a seed of greatness, and so you can build upon that, and it was good to have smiling faces when I got through this hour and a half presentation. It was a challenge in the sense that I was afraid, oh my God, you know, how it would go, but I was totally surprised, and I have a lot of people that came up afterwards and thanked me for what I have to say and so forth. Maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I think I'm being real too at the same time, because you know, we have to live a balanced life, and we got to get pulled back towards the middle track, so to speak.
Yep.
And if I could do that, if I can contribute that to your organization, hey, give me a call and let me know. I'd be more than happy to help, you know, from that perspective, because that's what I can do. You know, that's my contribution. That's the way I look at it, and that's how I perceive things. Well, how can someone get in touch with you and learn a little bit more about your programs and so forth?
They can call 1-800-CHILDREN.
Okay.
Or go to our website, www.preventchildabusetexas.org. And we'll be happy to help them get involved in child abuse prevention or answer any questions they may have about child abuse and how specific on their program or kids or something that we can help protect their child, because that's the bottom line. We want to keep any child from ever having to be abused.
Do you guys have any programs for the social workers and the counselors themselves, you know, in terms of helping them to get back, like you say, recharge the battery, so to speak?
We're trying to do more, because as we just alluded to, that's wearing them down. That's where
right.
we're seeing the turnover, and so we're trying to get more involved with them and to offer them programs on, as you said, recharging their batteries. Because the worst thing we can do is keep losing good people who care about kids,
mm-hmm.
and we need those experienced people to stay in the field and keep working on behalf of kids and not getting burned out. And so we're trying to address that issue. As a matter of fact, at the last legislative session, there was some legislation introduced to help fund programs like this, to give financial incentives to employees to stick around. So we're trying to keep these people who care about kids involved, because we certainly don't want to lose them.
And that's very, very interesting. What else besides that legislation, are there anything new programs that you guys are doing yourself with Prevent Child Abuse Texas?
There was some legislation passed at the last legislative session, again, that dealt with bullying and kids abusing kids,
mm-hmm.
and we're seeing such a growth. As a matter of fact, one of the last studies of elementary principals in Texas, bullying was identified as one of the top problems in the school. So we're trying to get back to this and to work with schools on and do some legislation and work with Texas Education Agency on what can we do to prevent bullying in schools. And along that same line, there was also some legislation introduced to working with schools on more child abuse prevention programs being implemented in their school system and helping teachers understand what to look for, how to report it, and more importantly, going back to how can they prevent child abuse in their classroom.
How does Texas stand with regards to programs and everything else, support and so forth, compared to the rest of the country?
Johnny, unfortunately, one of the last studies, I haven't seen one since the last legislative session, but before the last legislative session, one of the last studies I saw, a national study, ranked Texas 50th of the 50 states in spending 50th? For children. 50th and spending for children's services.
Wow.
So unfortunately, we weren't doing well. There was some extra funding in this last legislative session, but I don't know how much. We're not going to move up the list very far.
And who's the which state is the number one?
The most of the state, I don't remember right now off the top of my head, but
Yeah.
They were, I want to say Vermont, but it was one of the northeastern states.
Yeah, yeah.
Where most of the...
And has that translate to perhaps lower abuse within that state?
They do have one of the lower, yes. There was some, there were, the state
so
that spent the most
in
there, had a direct effect on the number of kids who are being abused.
That's very interesting statistics. I think that's something that, again, it's, you know, you can really, you really cannot find those kind of information to as readily as I think it should, or it needs to be covered by people to bring it up, because we're looking for instant recognition. We're looking for, you know, what you're talking about is, for lack of a better term, is non-glamorous. It's, you know, it's not sexy,
right.
So people don't talk about it.
And one of the, you know, one of the concerns I'm worried about,
mm-hmm.
is we've already seen memos come from the executive branch of the state government,
mm-hmm.
telling state agencies they've got to reduce their budgets by 5% by
right.
the next legislative session.
Right.
If we're already underfunding children's services, we're going to cut it another 5%. It really, really concerns me.
Right. Well, perhaps there should be other alternatives. And I know that at the end of this year, you guys have been doing this for a while. Don't you all have like a walk that you guys put together? I right off the bat, it just slipped my mind, but I know I've been invited to it, but it so happens that I have an event that day. Is
November.
In November? Yes.
November 6th, 2010 in San Antonio, we have the Walk for Action, which is a public awareness fundraising event we do every year to help raise funds and awareness on child abuse. And it's a 20-mile walk through the primary of the Mission Trails and along Riverwalk, and we end at the Alamo and have a rally at the Alamo. And we're hoping for a great turnout this year because there's no greater, in my mind, there's no mm-hmm. greater cause to walk for than our kids.
You guys have a tremendous support for that, though. I know over the years, I mean, I've seen some of the reports, and it's very well organized. And the things that you guys incorporate with it, you know, it's fascinating, and it's something that we'd be glad, like I say, to promote it for you, too, you know, as far as things that we, whatever we can do to raise the level of awareness.
Well, great. Thank you. We'll be back in touch on that.
I mean, it's fantastic. We're coming to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living that you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, I do, Johnny. What it is the starfish flinger, and probably you've heard it.
Uh-huh.
But if the old man walked the beach at dawn, he noticed a young man ahead of him picking up starfish and flinging them to the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Finally catching up with the youth, he asked him why he was doing this. The answer was the stranded starfish would die if left until the morning sun. But the beach goes on for miles, and there are millions of starfish, count the other. How can your effort make any difference? The young man looked at the starfish in his hand and threw it safely in the waves.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a difference to this one, he said.
I think each
one of us has starfish within our grasp,
mm-hmm.
our kids. We've just got to reach down, hold their hand, and make sure they're safe, because it will make a difference to this one. And I think if we're going to prevent child abuse, it's going to be one child at a time.
I agree, and it's a beautiful and certainly very interesting and very great. I mean, it's a great recipe for living that you have mentioned. It's you know, one can make a difference, and all it just takes for us to make the commitment to making the difference. Wendell, thank you again for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. I hope our show had given you a new perspective and raised up your level of awareness about this issue. It is it's an issue that is difficult to talk about, but I'm glad that I had the opportunity to do it this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning. Our theme will be This Spring, Something Springy, Something Spiritual, The Power of Dressing with Intentions. My guest will be Ivana Maggiore, the founder and president of Fashion Feng Shui International. We'll be discussing applying feng shui philosophy and principles to your personal appearance to achieve a happier, healthier, and more prosperous existence. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my weekly recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter, at Twitter / FMMK Talk Radio. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Wendell, thank you again and have a great day.
Thanks, Johnny.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.